We're getting close to the end of James now, and we're in James 5. We just finished a section about how to deal with adversity and things that make us anxious and worried and fearful. And then he comes to this next little piece here and comes to a verse that's kind of easy to skip over because it seems to be in between two main sections. The next section is about what to do when we get sick, about confession and prayer of faith. Look at that next time, Lord willing. There's this verse 12 that would be easy to skip over, and it's important to not skip over. In fact, the very first words of it tell us to don't skip over this fact or this thought. James 5, verse 12. But above all things, my brethren. So he's calling our attention. Say, this is a matter of high importance. Above all things. I've talked about a lot of things, but this is a very important matter. Above all things, my brethren, swear not, neither by heaven, neither by the earth, neither by any other oath, but let your yea be yea and your nay, nay, lest you fall into condemnation. So swear not, neither by heaven, neither by the earth, neither by any other oath, but let your yea be yea and your nay, nay, lest you fall into condemnation. And that passage sounds familiar to you. It's probably because you've heard it before from the words of Christ in Matthew 5. So let's read about it in Matthew 5. In Matthew 5, if you remember, Jesus is talking about how that he has come to not to destroy the law, but to fulfill the law. And he just shows he shows sort of the hypocrisy of how the Jews, the Pharisees, had taken the law and twisted it to their own use, to their own benefit. And he shows how that the law is not just the spirit of the law, or what he's expecting from us is not just the spirit of the law. It's got a lot more deep meaning. It's to the heart. He says, listen, don't think that you're off the hook of the Ten Commandment that says, thou shalt not kill, if you never shot anybody. He would say, there's something even bigger about this. He says, well, let's just read it. He says, verse 22, but I say unto you that whosoever is angry with his brother without a cause shall be in danger of the judgment. And whosoever shall say to his brother, Reka, shall be in danger of the council. But whosoever shall say, thou fool, shall be in danger of hell fire. So more of us get caught in that net, right? Well, I've never shot anybody, so I'm free from the commandment. I've obeyed God when he said, don't kill. He says, well, have you ever called anybody a fool? Have you ever been angry at somebody and found out later that you were the one that was in the wrong? That you thought you were justified in your anger, and you learn later that, well, really, it wasn't like you thought it was. He says, he's looking at the heart, isn't he? He's getting a lot closer to exposing us for what our real needs are. And of course, he shows himself as being our perfect righteousness. We just said God's perfect. Aren't you glad he's perfect? If anybody's ever said to somebody in anger, you fool, or some other similar type harsh statement. If you've ever been angry with somebody without a cause, you realize that makes me guilty of murder in the eyes of God. You say, I'm helpless. There's no hope for me. There's no hope of righteousness for me unless Christ's perfect righteousness covers me. So that's what Jesus is doing his whole life. His whole life was lived to show us what perfect righteousness was, but it also was to show us our lack thereof, okay? So he comes down to another similar point here in Matthew 5, verse 33. Again, ye have heard that it hath been said by them of old time, thou shalt not forswear thyself, but shalt perform unto the Lord thine oaths. But I say unto you, swear not at all, neither by heaven, for it is God's throne, nor by the earth, for it is his footstool, neither by Jerusalem, for it is the city of the great king. Neither shalt thou swear by thy head, because thou canst not make one hair white or black. But let your communication be permanently. But let your communication be yea, yea, nay, nay, for whatsoever is more than these cometh of evil. And so, isn't it interesting that James again is coming back to this whole matter of the words that are coming out of our mouth? How many times over this last year have we been looking at James? Have we talked about what we say and how we say it and what words come out of our mouth. James, the whole chapter 3 was devoted to this idea of the words that come out of our mouth are of vital importance. And then again, here at the end of this book, the end of this letter, encouraging these people to finish well, he comes right back to the idea of words, because it's very specific here. He talks about swearing. And he says, don't swear by heaven, don't swear by the earth, don't swear by Jerusalem. Instead, let your yea be yea, and your nay, nay, for whatsoever is more than these cometh of evil. So where's all this coming from? Well, all of this has its genesis in the Ten Commandments. Look at Exodus chapter 20. What's he talking about? And we're going to see what he's talking about here as we look at this tonight. Exodus chapter 20. Because it seems kind of far off from our world when we first look at this, but it's really not. Exodus 20, and I remind you that as God was preparing to give these Ten Commandments to the children of Israel, if you remember, he developed this whole scene where the people had to wash themselves for several days to prepare for this appearance by God. And then after they had washed themselves and purified themselves and cleansed themselves, they still were told, you can't come near this place where God will appear, this mountain Sinai where God will appear. But God did give them the visual and the sensory awareness of His presence, in that He sent this great earthquake and this lightning came from heaven and this mountain just was consumed with this smoke, and the ground was shaking and this loud noises and this lightning flashing across the sky, no doubt coming very near the surface, not touching the surface. And the people were awed, okay? They were awed, they were scared. In fact, later when Moses came down from the mountain and he gave the Ten Commandments, they said, listen, Moses, here's how we want to do this. You go talk to God and you come back and tell us what He says, but we don't want to have a face-to-face with God. Because the sight of God is just too frightening. It's too terrible. It's too awesome. Okay? And so God purposely appeared this way. Okay? When God appeared with the Ten Commandments, He did it in such a way that He was, for probably unparalleled time beforehand, He was showing just His august presence, His majesty, His glory, the fact that He is so glorious, so excellent, so unlike us, okay? Now, it's been a long time since God has appeared in that kind of way, right? Now, we have seen His presence felt through His Holy Spirit, changing hearts, providing for our needs, stopping the mouths of lions, pulling us out of temptation. And I am not saying that we have not felt His presence, but I am saying that because it's been such a long time since God has appeared visually, sensory, in such fashion, it would be very easy for us, and I'm not just spitting in the wind here, it's the truth, it is very easy for us to not view God as He really is. Okay? It's very easy for us to bring God down several notches, or an infinite number of notches, and think that, you know, we can kind of negotiate with God, and that God's ways and His standards are sort of optional. Is that not how our world lives? Is that not how you and I think sometimes? So we're going to talk about swearing. It's not that big of a deal, right? I mean, everybody sometimes, you know, lets loose a curse word, or everybody sometimes, you know, reneges on a promise. It's just, but listen, the whole point of God sending these Ten Commandments at this time was to show, and the way He did it was to show that He is an awesome God who is to be reverenced and be feared. In fact, Psalm 89 verse 7 just gives the right view of God. It says, God is greatly to be feared in the assembly of the saints and to be held in reverence of all them that are about Him. And certainly we don't run from God, because we know through Christ, we know fellowship with God. But let's not try to explain away what it's saying about God here. God is greatly to be feared in the assembly of the saints and to be held in reverence of all them that are about Him. And that word reverence, the root words of reverence, means dread. It means fright. It means terrible. Fear. Okay? So understand that I'm not encouraging us to run away from God. No, I'm just encouraging us to behold Him as He really is. He is our Father who beckons us. He is the God who stands with His underlasting arms holding us. And His hands are underneath us. He is a very present refuge in time of trouble. But He is still God. Okay? He's a holy God. He's a high God. And we just have to ask the Spirit of God to give us that balance all the time, right? Because when I think of God just as being a Father, and I forget that He's a holy Father, a heavenly Father, you know, I think of God being like my Father. He's a great guy, and I love Him, but he's a sinner too. He's quick to look over my misdeeds because He loves me, and He's a sinner. And that's not how God is, okay? He doesn't hold our trespasses against us, but that's only because of what Christ has done. Okay? He's a holy, reverend God. And so in this Ten Commandments, He says in verse 7, "Thou shalt not take the name of the Lord thy God in vain." Now listen to what it says next. "For the Lord will not hold him guiltless that taketh his name in vain." Now every one of these commands so far is to show us the glory of God and to tell us how to relate to this glorious God. It says first, don't have any other gods before thee. It says in another place, don't make you any graven images. Don't try to approximate what God is in a visual way. God is spirit. He's to be worshipped in spirit and in truth. And then it says, and don't take the name of the Lord thy God in vain. Don't take His name lightly. Don't take His name profanely. Don't take His name in vain. And not just in word, all this is speaking of in word, but don't take His name, Christians, in vain. In other words, don't take on the name of Christ and say, I'm a follower of Jesus Christ, and then just live your life vainly or lightly and say, well, I've got Christ, and that's all that matters. He loves me, and I'm fine. I'm good shape. Don't do that. If you're going to take the name of Christ, then as the putting your hand to the plow, don't ever turn back. But stick to the plow all your life. Follow Christ all your life reverently. Don't take His name in vain. And so then in Leviticus, it tells us a little bit more what it means to take His name in vain. Leviticus chapter 19. So you see, this whole thing in James 5 is talking about words, but it's talking about something more than just words. It's talking about our character, okay? It's talking about how we view God. And how we view God determines our character, and then it will determine the words that come out of our mouth, especially in relation to God. So in Leviticus 19, verse 12, it tells us another kind of more explanation of what it means to take the name of God in vain. Verse 12, "And ye shall not swear by my name falsely, neither shalt thou profane the name of thy God." And then he says, "I am the Lord." So he's going right back to, "I am Jehovah." In fact, the Jews, probably superstitiously, but in some ways I think they were well-intentioned anyway. They so feared the name Jehovah, it was Yahweh, okay, that they would not utter this name, all right? They would write the name, they'd write the letters, they oftentimes would not utter this name. Obviously, later on it became superstitious, and they did not do it, as we'll see in a minute, they did not do it in a godly fashion. But friends, this is the dreadful, terrible, awesome, glorious name of the God of the universe. He says, "I am the God of the universe. I am this self-existent God. I am Jehovah, the one who has no beginning, who has no source. There is nothing behind me. There's nothing greater than me. I exist because I exist. And I never had a beginning." It's a great God, right? This is an awesome God. There was no starter of material that started me. I self-exist. I exist because I exist. I am that I am. Glorious God, we can't even fathom. We can't grasp, right? So he says, don't take my name in vain because I am God. And what does it mean to take his name in vain? Here he says, don't swear by my name falsely and don't profane the name of thy God. So we're talking about several things in this James passage. I want to break them down for you so we'll make sure we understand just what we're talking about. The first thing we're talking about is swearing and taking the name of God in vain and profaning His name. We're talking about, first of all, profanity. Okay? That's the first thing. That's not the primary part of this of this James passage, but it's certainly included. Profanity. Leviticus 19, verse 12. Don't profane the name of thy God. Don't profane. That word profane means to defile. Defile. And that word, it means to defile. It means to bore. It means to wound. Don't wound the name of God. Don't defile the name of God. Don't utter the name of God lightly or frivolously or derisively. And you know, there's something about the wicked that they love to defile the precious, glorious name of God. Isn't that true? Don't defile His name. And the Exodus says is that God is not going to hold him guiltless who defiles His name. But you see it all over. The wicked love to, even the wicked who don't believe in God, love to use the word God in their curses, right? But there's another profaning of His name that we can do if we're not careful. And that is to use His name lightly. I'm talking about habits. It's just a habitual thing most of the time. It's thoughtless words. You see it in acronyms, OMG, oh my God. When you're just having casual conversation and you're having nothing, that has nothing to do with God, and yet you will say, oh my God, this happened yesterday. Or, oh Lordy, Lordy. Things that, you know, you have your own, we have our own little habitual things. I'm not going to try to quote all of them. I don't want to do that tonight. But you understand what I'm saying? I used to get really angry. I was a child at school, and Brother Jimmy Barber was our teacher and our co-pastor, and he would emphasize this. And we would try to find some expression we could use that would be acceptable to him, and we just couldn't find one. We'd say, oh my goodness, and he'd say, well that you're talking about, who's good? You're talking about God. Or, I won't go through all of them. But I would get so mad because I was saying, let me find something that I can say that would be acceptable. And friends, that'll be the opposite, right? That'll be, I don't want to find something I can say that will get as close as possible to being comfortable with what the world does, and yet not, and yet, I don't want to be that way. I think he was right. He was right. Honor the name of God. Don't defile the name of God. Don't take it lightly. But in our thinking, we think that, or we can think, we can be tempted to think that as long as we're okay with the name God, technically, then, you know, other profanity is, you know, just, we shouldn't do it, but it's not that big of a deal. And what he says in Ephesians 5 is this, in regards to all profanity. He says in Ephesians 5, he says, verse 4, neither filthiness, nor foolish talking, nor jesting. That word jesting is speaking of vulgar, ribald, just vulgar jesting, which are not convenient, but rather giving of thanks. He says in verse 12, for it is a shame even to speak of those things which are done of them in secret. So, friends, especially young men, God is calling us. He's demanding that we, the words that come out of our mouths, not be light towards His name, not profane or defile His name, and we can profane or defile the name of God without ever saying the name God. Okay? We can profane and defile the name when the words that come out of our mouth are vulgar. When the stories that come out of our mouths are vulgar. That defiles the name of God. Now, we have to be careful with this because we can say, and this happens, it's happened to me before. Okay, I'm not going to, we're so full of information today. News is at the push of a button or just the turning on the radio. We're so close to all sorts of news. And the news, because of the way our natural minds work, the news of the weird and abnormal just seem to be more interesting to us, or to me anyway, than any other kind of news. And much of the time it's vulgar. And it's so weird. And it's like, and you think, how could I be interested in that? And it's just because our natural minds like just foolishness. And so, or it can be programs that we watch on television. As long as I'm not saying vulgar things, it's okay to sort of chuckle inside at vulgar things as I watch it with my eyes. Friends, that's still part of profaning the name of God, okay? And he says, listen, this is an august, awesome God. Don't defile His name by what comes out of your mouth in any fashion. And don't defile His name in your heart. Don't defile the name of God. The second thing this is talking about is oaths. Oaths. And this is oaths that were used in daily conversation. I'll kind of break it down into what they were doing in three different ways. An oath is when they would say, I'm telling you that this is true. What I'm telling you is true. And I tell you, by God, this is true. So when you say, by God, you're saying, if this is not true, then may the wrath of God come down upon me, okay? Or they would say, I'm telling you by the city of Jerusalem, this is true. So if it's not true, well, call Jerusalem to come and fall down upon me. And these people were just engaged in these habits of just making these oaths continually, all the time, in regular, light conversation. And there are three things going on here. The first was that they were, let's just read it in Matthew 5:33. It says, thou shalt not forswear thyself, okay? Thou shalt not forswear thyself. And forswear just means perjury. Don't perjurize yourself. Don't lie. They were being caught in lies. They were saying, this is true. And it would turn out that it was not true. Now imagine a society like that where all around you there's this constant perjury. Well, you don't have to imagine too much, do you? You kind of live in it, right? You can't trust what anybody says. Isn't that a big problem in our world today? It's from your government. Your government says something and you go, well, but what's really, is that really true? You want to look behind the words and read between the lines, right? In order to find out what's really true? What's the problem here? The problem is that we live in a society of perjury. People say something, but you don't know if it's true or not. It's sort of like the child who says, Daddy, you know, I did this, and you found out they didn't do it, and they said, well, I have my fingers crossed. Or the person that has to say, listen, I promise this is true. Well, why do you have to say, I promise three times? Why? Because if they don't say it, you know they're lying, right? Because they have a reputation of not telling the truth. These people were forswearing that they're perjurizing, that they were liars. He says, lying is defiling the name of God. It's taking the name of God in vain. We'll see in just a minute. They were forswearing thyself. And then there was just this vain swearing. In other words, they were just every little thing. I'm trying to think of an example in our society. I can't think of one now, but just every little thing is, I promise this is true. And it's just trivial, small matters. It didn't make any difference. Just constantly swearing by these names. So let's turn to Matthew 5. Look at this a little bit. Matthew 5, the first problem was lying, swearing about things. In Matthew 5, though, he talks about the real problem. In fact, you turn to Matthew 5, and I'm going to turn to Leviticus 19. And I'm going to read this for you again. And I want you to tell me, I'm going to ask for volunteers, tell me what this is saying. And ye shall not swear by my name falsely. Now, what's the emphasis here of this passage? I'm going to read it again. Don't swear by God's name falsely. What's he saying? Huh? Don't lie. Everybody agree with that? Don't swear by my name falsely. You agree? He's saying don't lie. Okay? Tell the truth. All right? Let's read this Matthew 5 again. It's the same as James 5. Again, ye have heard, hath been said of old time, don't forswear thyself, but shalt perform to the Lord thine oaths. But I say unto you, swear not at all, neither by heaven, for it is God's throne, nor by earth, for it is his footstool, neither by Jerusalem, for it is the city of the great king, neither shalt thou swear by thy head, because thou canst not make one hair white or black. Now, why did he say all these things? Why did he say, don't swear by Jerusalem, and don't swear by your head, and don't swear by heaven, and don't swear by the earth. Why is he saying this? He's saying this because in their wicked minds, you see, it's amazing in our, by our nature how the extent that we will go to skirt the issue if it's advantageous for us. Here's how they were reading Leviticus 19, verse 12. "And ye shall not swear by my name falsely." Okay? Now, how did you read it? You read it, "You shall not swear falsely." Don't lie. Tell the truth. But they read it, "Thou shalt not swear by my name falsely." You get it? In other words, they thought, we won't swear by God, but if we swear by these lesser things, then they will be less binding upon us, and we will not defile His name if they turn out to not be true. Get it? And so, what does Jesus say to them? He said, "Are you kidding me? You swear by heaven and think it's less binding. Guess who owns heaven? Guess who made heaven? That's where I live. And you swear by the earth and think it's less binding, but guess what? That's my footstool. And you swear by Jerusalem, that's my city. And you swear by your head, and you can't even make one hair white or black. That's in my control." And so it's swearing by these things that are less binding. They felt like they could skirt the issue. Again, isn't it amazing the lengths people will go to seek to explain away bad behavior? I said, "God, we're not guilty. We haven't been swearing by your name, so we're okay. We may be liars. You may not be able to count on us. We may prove to be false all the time. But as long as we're not swearing by your name, we're scot-free." What's the idea here, friends? The idea here is that we can separate the sacred from the rest of life, okay? We have the same problem today. As long as I'm at church, I need to be churchy. I want to be religious when I'm at church. But there are certain areas of life, certain activities in life, that as long as I'm separating them, this is not sacred. It's okay to participate, to engage, to speak a certain way. It's okay as long as it's not about God or around God. And what God is saying here, He said, "Listen, you can't get away from me. I am everywhere. And I am connected to everything. You can't separate God from anything. You can't separate your religious life from the rest of life. You can't do it." They were just trying to separate their words. He says, "It's impossible. Don't swear by heaven. That's my throne. Don't swear by the earth. It's my footstool." So He's talking about oaths. Oaths in daily conversation. Let me say this. I personally don't believe, and I think Scripture will back me up, we don't have time for this tonight, but I don't believe that He is absolutely saying that there are no oaths that we can make. I think Scripture will show that. I think this is oaths that are frivolous, oaths in the conversation, oaths when yes or no should have been sufficient. The reason I say that is this. Number one, Jesus Himself did not refuse, as this was in a court of law, or He was before the Sanhedrin, Jesus Himself did not refuse to testify when called to testify by an oath there at His last trial. God Himself, to emphasize the faithfulness of His promise, He swore, He added to His word, His oath, He swore that He would faithfully bring us back to glory with Him. Okay? Hebrews 6. There are other places where the Bible says that God swore. And Paul would do the same thing when he would say, I tell you that God is my witness that this happened. Okay? So I don't think that any oath is wrong. Certainly, called to testify in court, I don't think you're wrong to place your hand on the Bible and swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, nothing but the truth. I think that you take a vow when you join your hand in matrimony to a person for the rest of your life. You make a vow when you join a church. There are plenty of vows that we make, but these light, frivolous vows that are might be true, He says, don't swear at all. So here's the third point, the last point. What He is calling us here to in James and in Matthew He is calling us to lives of honesty and lives of integrity. He is saying that the truth should reign supreme in your life. That what you say should be true. Brother, there's another statement from Brother Jimmy Barber that he used to tell us all the time. He would say, let your word be your bond. Let your word be your bond. And friends, young people, all of us, how important that is. Let your word be your bond. Let your yea be yea. Let your nay be nay. You say you're going to do it? Then do it. Be trustworthy. Okay? He's calling us to trustworthiness. Let others count on your word. When you give your word, people can count on your word. And here's an important part of this. Don't lightly agree to anything. Don't lightly agree to anything. There are vows that we make. I mentioned them just a minute ago. The vow of marriage and the vow of church membership and following Christ. There's financial vows that we make. We put our pens to a dotted line. It's so important. Let's talk about marriage for a minute. Both sides of this, but if you understand that your word has got to be your bond and that God's going to be profaned, defiled, or honored by your word, then you will not lightly enter into marriage. Isn't it strange that, well, I mean, not really. We're foolish in our thinking. Don't lightly enter into marriage, young people, when you try to get married. And by lightly, I say, and what are signs of lightly doing it? Signs of lightly doing it are if there is great concern from the wisdom of your pastors or your parents and encouragement to slow down and to wait. I'd say if you proceed, that's lightly entering into it. On the other side, once you're in, our society lightly adheres to the vow, the covenant of marriage. And the ruin to our society is manifest in terrible proportions because of this one thing. Let your yea be yea, let your nay be nay. For whatsoever is more of these cometh of evil. The same is true of many other areas of life. And so, he would say to us, be truthful. This really is all about how you view God. If you view God as He really is, He's greatly to be feared, and He's reverenced, and you're in awe of God. And what you say will be impacted dramatically. May God bless you.